I'm not going to be a multimillionaire selling ringing simulators, I can assure you. But I do think that there is such a big benefit that every tower really, you know, ought to be thinking about how they use them or how they could use them, especially if they've got young members.
Before we start, just a quick message to say that this is the end of season 3. We'll be taking a short break for August and then back in September with season 4. My guest today is Steve Farmer, who designed and builds the wireless church bell simulator hardware, Simbell. Steve, my first question is, how long have you been ringing?
I've only actually been ringing for, well, 4.5 years. I started in 2016, run up to Christmas. My wife has been ringing for 20 odd years, and that was the one thing that she did that I didn't. But we had a open day as part of the Heritage Open Days at the church, and she was sure that nobody was going to turn up and begged me to go along to go up the tower and have a go at ringing, just so that they had somebody go there. And basically, I got there within 15 minutes, I was hooked.
What was your experience of learning to ring?
I was taught in a very traditional way, in that we had our tower captain at the time, who basically gave me half an hour every now and then when we could fit it in before practices and things. And I learnt how to ring as you used to probably 30 or 40 years ago. And that was one of the things that made me think, realistically, I need more rope time. And that was the basis of it. But of course, the issue that you have with bells is the fact they make an awful lot of noise. And the fact of somebody learning to ring and the constant bonging meant that I thought we had to do something else, or there must be a way of doing it. And that's when I started to look into simulators and what people were doing, other people were doing.
What did you find?
To be honest, there were two options at the time. There was the wired system that David Bagley made, and then there was another wireless system called Belfry that Tony Croft made. And I decided that I needed something, so I thought, well, I don't want to put wires in, and it was quite expensive as a system for what was really just for one person to learn, as I thought it. I was looking at it from a totally selfish point of view. So I went to contact Tony Croft, and he didn't respond to my email. And that's the basis of how I got into the whole thing of simulators. If Tony had actually responded to the email, Simbell probably wouldn't even exist, because I just would have bought a Belfry system and learnt, and off I would have gone. But I looked at all sorts of things, how you could, you know, create systems, how systems were created. I do have a background originally in electronics, and things have moved on considerably in the sort of 20 or 30 years since I last seriously looked at it, as they always do. And consequently, I looked at what was available now and decided there must be another way of doing it. And that sort of led me down into modern microprocessor systems, and then into wireless, so that I didn't have to run wires down the tower, etc., etc. It just ran as an ongoing thing, with things through my house from one end to the other, trying to get through walls and trying different sensors and sensor systems, and driving my long-suffering wife spare with all the bonging that was going on, or not, as the case may be. This is the way that you develop systems like that. I only really developed it for our church. The thought was I would make a system and that was it. But of course, then other people hear what you're doing, and it goes on and on that, and suddenly you're making them for other people, and then you're thinking, well, actually, there must be a demand for this. And so I started making them as a hobby and selling them as we went along.
How does Simbell work?
Okay, the basis of simulators is a sensor on the wheel, predominantly on the wheel of a bell. And one of the surprising things that I didn't know was that the fact that a bell would generally strike, so you'll get the bong, as I call it, at the same point as the wheel revolves. So at the same point as the bell swings round, you get the strike of the clapper. So I looked at the systems that were already in existence, and they do predominantly what Symbel does. So you have a reflector that's on the wheel that determines a position of the bell when the bell has its face down, because normally, obviously, when bells are just in their down position, they're always in the same place. And from there, as they swing up, there is a certain time, and then you get the strike of the clapper. So as long as you can work out that time, then what you can do is, as the sensor is detected as the bell is at its bottom position, you can set a timer that says so many milliseconds from there to the point that you get your bong, both ways. So we actually use an infrared sensor. There are magnetic sensors. You know, there are a lot of people have made simulators just with a simple magnetic switch, which is connected to the serial port of a computer, and it will do exactly the same job, and it will work quite happily. It's just I wanted something that was had the additional benefit of being wireless, so we hadn't got to put wires down the tower and get power, because at the time we also didn't have any power, so consequently I was using batteries. But the basic principle is the same for the majority. There are some that work with two sensors, one on either side of the wheel at the strike point. So they determine when the bong actually happens, and you put the sensor there, so when it sees it, it immediately goes bong. So it'd be almost like a doorbell type system. And then there is more complex electronic systems that determine the angle that the bell is at and its acceleration, and then they will actually use that to determine the strike point. But fundamentally, they're doing exactly the same thing. At the point which you would normally get the bong, you're tying the clapper so it's not making a noise to the outside world, but you can have exactly the same effect as far as the ringers are concerned, because they get the bong at the right place.
Ah, that's something we haven't said, which is what the simulator's doing. It's making a bong on the inside rather than the outside of the tower.
Yeah, basically a ringing simulator is any equipment that allows ringers to practice ringing without the bells in the tower sounding. So the clapper would be tied and any sound would come from another source. So originally it was a smaller bell located with the ringers in the ringing room, but nowadays obviously it's a computer. One of the things that I find quite surprising is the first ringing simulators were back in 1870, 1875. There was a guy with the best name in the world, Epaphras Sieg, who was a printing engineer, lived in Exeter, and he installed a system in St. Sidwell's in Exeter, which is an 8-bell tower. The bells were put in 1773. Sadly, I believe it's not there anymore. But he lived in Sidwell Street from about 1861 to 1871. So somewhere within that point, I think it's reasonable to say that he installed this wonderful mechanical system of levers and wires that, as the bell went round, it actuated a lever which was connected to wires and springs and things that went down to the ringing room. And there were some small bells that were originally just almost like the call bells that you used to have in old houses for servants. And they would ring as a modern simulator would, do exactly the same job. I mean, he actually built it, put the first one into St. Sidwell's, and then afterwards he produced more and they went around the country, quite a lot of them in Devon. But as usually with happens with these things, he didn't patent it, and therefore the bell hangers started producing them, or the people started producing them. And sadly, he went out of business, both as far as producing his simulators, and also he ended up bankrupt. So, you know, he moved into another Coon Street in Exeter, and as a lodger, so he even lost his house. It was simulators can be mechanical, they can be electronic. It's just that obviously in this day and age, electronics are and computers are there for everybody. But those were the very, very first one. All work in the same way, so they're still doing the same, exactly the same thing.
How does using a simulator help ringers to learn?
When I first produced the system, I always used to say, sometimes when you're learning, you just need a bong. And I believe that when you're learning, if you just tie a bell and you've got the rope going up and down, you're learning your backstroke and your handstroke over and over, you don't, as part of that, relate that to the sound happening, because when you're ringing a bell, the sound is happening later. So when you pull on the rope and you pull a hand stroke, it's going to be perhaps a second and a half before you get the bong. And you have to have that correlation between you pulling and when the bong is occurring. So in the simplest form, just being able to provide a learner from day one, when they're learning to just use the backstroke to ring a bell up to halfway, getting that bong happening allows their brain to link the two together with the time delay that's naturally going to be there later. And I think that's really important later on when you're asking people to start listening for their bell. And they struggle sometimes with actually determining what they're listening for in the first place. And certainly when you've got other bells around. So at a very basic level, all I wanted do was to produce a bong. And then, of course, you add into that modern software and you're talking a completely different world of teaching as far as accelerated learning, with people you not having to have a willing band of volunteers around a learner for hours and hours at any one time, just ringing rounds or ringing basic call change, whatever you're doing, just to get a learner started. You don't get complaints from a piece of simulator software that you've actually just been ringing rounds for half an hour nonstop, whereas you may get those in the tower if you hadn't got some very willing volunteers.
Yes, because with the software, you can have the other bells being rung. Is that how it works?
Yeah. But basically, I'm particularly interested in using simulator software in the tower or on a dumbbell, because obviously the simulators are an essential part of a dumbbell. But you can have simulator software where you're just watching the screen, you're sitting there and you're pressing keys on your keyboard and learning methods, particularly things like ringing room through the recent pandemic has been a massive piece of development in the ringing world and has allowed people to keep some of their method skills together. But my interest is far more in the tower, where you've got a rope in your hand and you're actually starting to learn. So it's very simple with modern software to set up as big a screen as you can. So go and nick somebody's television, and what you end up doing then is you have big people in the tower on the screen that are ringing with you. So when you start ringing, then what happens is that the ringer that you are representing, so if you have six ringers, would be a classic example. If you're ringing bell number three and you're ringing rounds, you watch the screen, you can see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the bells ring. And then when you pull your first hand stroke, number three disappears, and now you've become part of that virtual band. So you can then work right the way through to complex methods, ringing rounds. You can do basically anything that you can do in a tower, but you're looking at a screen rather than looking, you know, at the people around you. It's a very versatile tool. If you're teaching a new ringer how to dodge, so how to swap two bells and then swap back again, you can have a foot switch on the floor that starts that off. And basically, you can do it for hours. And you could do it at 9 o'clock at night if that suits, because you're not causing any disruption to anybody outside. So it also opens up the ability for you to teach when suitable for a teacher and a student, rather than what's suitable for the neighbours and what you think they'll stand.
I see that you rang your first quarter peal, playing Bob Minor inside, in January 2020, just before the first lockdown. What was it like to achieve that? This is a quick break to thank our sponsors, the Association of Ringing Teachers, ART. You can find out more at bellringing.org, where there are resources to support your ringing, to find out how to learn to ring, or to learn to teach. Now back to the episode.
Yeah, that was quite interesting, actually. Our local band, we're predominantly a call change band with a bit of plain hunt. So very basic, nothing complicated. Now, I started doing the art courses. I did my handling course, and then I wanted to go and do the M2 course. But one of the prerequisites for that is you have to have rung a quarter peal inside on six bells or more. So the only way that I could do that was to use the simulator to learn how to ring it and then gather myself a band and say, right, at my tower, please, could you come on a Friday morning, which is what it was, and please ring really, really well to help me get through my first quarter peal. And that's exactly what I did. So I spent hours learning Bob Minor, learning the bobs and singles from several different bells, just so that I could do it. But of course, I'd never actually rung for 45 minutes concentrating. And that was really, I found it quite hard in the beginning to actually concentrate for that long because your mind starts wandering. But of course, with the simulator, I rang probably 8, 9, 10 quarter peals the sort of 10 days before so that I was ready. I do have to say I got together probably one of the strongest bands I could have done from the guild. I had two ringing masters, several people that have got several hundred quarters and peals among them, and I was in the middle. So to be honest, it was so much like ringing with a simulator because they just don't go wrong. And the treble is always where you want it to be. And it was wonderful. And I have to say, I came out of there walking 6 feet high. But it was all actually the others. I was fitting in. But I didn't make a mistake. We got through it. And I went on the course, had a brilliant time, thoroughly enjoyed it. So, yeah, that was the story of my quarter peel. And I, of course, then thought I can do, I'd like to do another, at least another half dozen this year. And then everything shut down last March. And I've only done them on the simulator since.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the course you're referring to?
The art course. I did the bell handling course down in Meal Brace. Oh, probably 2 years ago, because I really enjoy teaching. I enjoy seeing people, taking people from nothing the way up to the point where they're doing basic ringing. But obviously, I haven't been teaching very long either, for the simple reason. We thought it was sensible to go on some courses, get some background. And I did that course with Paul Lewis, and it was absolutely superb. I cannot emphasize how good the art stuff is. The art courses are. But of course, the next stage is then moving on from handling to plain hunt and basic methods. And there was the courses up north are not as common as they are in the south of England, or certainly below Birmingham. And one came up in Dunham Massey. And Moira Johnson was running it, who I'd had actually come across at some of the art conferences. So I thought, I'm going to go for it. Now, it's a course that basically makes you put yourself in the shoes almost of a learner and teaches you how to take them from the basic plain hunt up into the basic methods, dodging, and how to bring on a group of ringers. And it was a full day, and it was a full-on day as well. It was, you know, it literally was constant right the way through, and you came out of it knowing that you've been on a course. It's quite a long time since I was at college or doing a lot of training. But you came out of it thinking, yeah, now I just want to get hold of some learners and actually put it into practice. So I'm now having to revisit quite a lot of it as we're starting to get ringing again.
Yes. Going back to simulators, what are the key differences between your wireless simulators and the hardwired sensors?
Okay, as the name says, with a wired system, you tend to have cables that run down from the belfry into the ringing room, be that the floor below or two or three floors, or if you're in Liverpool, half a mile, or it probably seems like that. But the wires run down, they provide power going back up again. You plug them in at the bottom, and all the signals come down the low voltage cable. Now, the wireless system, basically you don't have those wires, so you have a transmitter that's on each bell up in the belfry, and you have a receiver down wherever the ringing room is, and all of the signals are transferred through radio frequency in our case. A lot of people say it's Wi-Fi. It isn't Wi-Fi because there are far too many latency issues with Wi-Fi. The same with Bluetooth. So consequently, radio frequency is almost instantaneous, not to any extent that you would ever notice it. And it will transmit through normal wooden floors. We've had a few issues with thick concrete floors that we've had in a couple of installations, but we've got round those using either repeaters or an extender to put the receiver just a further bit up the tower. And you can get through, but it's ease of operation, to be honest, because one of the things that we realised was that a lot of towers don't have simulators. If there is a teacher who's invited or wants to go and teach at another tower where there isn't one, I wanted to provide something where you could just go and literally set up a simulator. I call them a pop-up simulator in half an hour and be ringing. So consequently, with wireless and using a battery, you only need to do one or a couple of bells generally. You can literally go up into the belfry, you put a small reflector, which is self-adhesive, onto the wheel, and then put the transmitter by it, go downstairs, turn on your receiver, and you're operational, apart from just setting up the timing, which might take you, 5 minutes, just to know where the bongs occur in real life and just match the simulator software to it if you can. And off you go. And then when you're finished, you go upstairs, remove your transmitter, and off you go home. So you can create these pop-up simulators in any tower almost that you want to. And I've done it in a lot of towers now. Just been to give demonstrations or basic teaching, a basic training session on how to use them. Because one of the big things with simulators, with the software, is a lot of people just use simulators for what you would call a silent practice. So they don't use the people at all, or very little. They just have six real ringers with the simulator software providing the bongs. And they are missing out so much in what can be done. So again, there is an art workshop that actually explains how you can benefit from simulators and what they can do for you in your tower and your ringers and how you can use them to progress. So that's the basic principle, just going back to the question, I suppose, is that one has wires and one doesn't.
And it sounds like that one's a lot easier to put in.
It is certainly as a temporary measure for pop-up. You just couldn't do that with wires. It would be very difficult. You could run a wire down the stairwell, but you still got to mount the sensors. Ours, people are now, if they got a metal frame, they're using magnets, the little neodymium magnets. They glue a couple onto the bottom of the transmitter and just click it onto the metal frame at a convenient point and do the same with the battery. That's behind it, and away they go. It's very simple to set up in that instant.
And do you have guidance for people if they buy the hardware, how they install it?
Yeah, you get a manual. I'm a great believer in videos, as people may know. I've done quite a lot of videos on how to use simulators, but I also do them on installation. I'm currently redoing all the installation because a couple of years on now from when I did the first videos, so we've got more installation videos happening. But it's more about getting people to use simulators as a positive thing for their tower. I'm not going to be a multimillionaire selling ringing simulators, I can assure you, but I do think that there is such a big benefit that every tower really ought to be thinking about how they use them or how they could use them, especially if they've got young members. Another thing, people like, certainly young people, quite like competition. And with the simulator software that's around nowadays, you can get results, for want of a better term, for things like striking. So how accurate are they when they're ringing rounds for 5 minutes? And it will give them all sorts of statistics and graphs and numbers that they can say, who was the best, who was the most accurate ringer this time? And if you're even ringing as a normal band, a lot of the software now, certainly a virtual belfry, which is the one that I predominantly use, that will analyse live ringing and tell you whether the band is staying at the correct speed. So if you set off at a particular pace, are you still going at that pace when you get to the end of 240 changes, 720 changes, whatever you ring? Are you still at the same pace? And how accurate is your striking within that? So there's a lot of analysis that can be done. It's not as accurate as Hawk Ear, which is the one they use for things like the National 12-Bell competition, in association with real people analysing the ringing, of course. It's only a backup because Hawkear is listening for the actual sounding of the clappers, but it will give you a general feeling. And if you're a band that likes going in for striking competitions, then knowing when you're a little bit out is something that's easily accessible now.
So then Cymbel's been around for about 3 years, isn't it?
Yeah, about 3 years. I'm on version 5.
And how many towers has it gone into? Do you know?
I've got something like 54, I think, at the moment. But surprisingly, I thought during the sort of lockdown and the pandemic, things would go quite quiet. But there's quite a lot of people that have been doing other things. I've sold a lot to people who've put dumbbells in their garages, singles or multiple ones. I had a guy who is in Germany, and he built a really impressive dumbbell in his loft. Beautiful, beautifully built. So, you know, and there is a lot of interest now. I'm getting a lot of inquiries and people wanting demo systems to try things in their tower. So I think that people are coming out. Again, I think it's the influence of things like Ringing Room, where people are seeing what non-tower ringing can do for them, or the moving forward from the basic ways of methods of teaching that people have had for literally for centuries, and try and embrace some of these modern techniques to accelerate what their band does and how they do it.
You mentioned videos, just to say those are on YouTube, aren't they?
Yeah, I've got a YouTube channel called Cymbel Technical, but I'm doing quite a few at the moment for the Association of Ringing Teachers for Art to go onto their website, onto the Smart Ringer website, on specific things. They're called bite-sized videos, so they're very short, less than 5 minutes. Some of them are only a minute, just to show you how to do certain things, how to turn on rope sight flashes, how to change the volume of different parts, make your own bell louder, things like that. And I've agreed to continue to do those as they want. I really enjoy doing the videos. It's quite good fun. I want to do some tower tours as well, as we go showing different installations and how people can use it. And as soon as we can get back to full ringing, then I want to do some on the more, what you call, the more complicated parts of using simulators. So things like analysing real ringing, where I'll get a band that think they're good in and show them how good they really are. It's not competitive for everybody, but for some it is, particularly for young people, as I said.
Yes, and I understand you're planning to do some work with young people in your local school. Could you explain a bit more about that?
What I'm trying to do is to get... I live in a small village, and we have a local church primary school that... They have each year a leavers service. What I'm trying to do is to get together a group of people that would work with the school. My wife works at the school, and I've had some initial, very brief conversations about the people just finishing year 5, going into year 6, and doing a bit of a boot camp over the summer, and then working with them over the year so that they can actually ring at their own leavers service. I just think it would be something that would be different. But obviously, to do that, there is an awful lot of paperwork and bits and pieces. And you've also got to find the people that are willing to give up the time to work not only with the children, but to make sure that the parents are under control. We're not talking about large amounts of kids here, but you've still got to have a lot of checks and balances in place to make sure that everything is safe and safeguarding is dealt with and everything else. So you need a number of people. That will also come and teach, because it's a relatively short time, a year, to get somebody of year 5, 6 to the point. But even if they could just ring rounds, we are quite a light tower. So consequently, it's quite possible for somebody who's of that size to ring our tenor. It's just something that I have in mind. It'll be something I think will be different, be interesting, and would actually make a good link between the church and the school as well. A lot of the kids see the church as that big old building that stands out of the village. And they go there high days and holidays for certain services. But I just think it'll be quite good. And I think it'll be something that's interesting to do.
Yeah, that sounds great.
I'll let you know next year how I got on.
That's my last question before the last two questions. Is there anything else that you wanted to cover, Steve?
No, I mean, I would just say that I think the simulator scene, if you want to put it like that, is expanding. And I'm really interested in where it's going to go. In the last 10 or 15 years, it's gone, obviously, electronic. And I'm looking forward. And when you look at what's happening with things like virtual reality, and augmented reality, particularly. So where you're mixing live things that you're seeing, but you're superimposing, for want of a better term, other things on top of it. I can see a situation in the not too distant future where you'll be able to have a headset and ring either on a dumbbell, but actually being able to look around, because obviously if you're looking on a screen, you've got everybody either in a straight line, or if you're using a bell, then you can put them into a circle or a potential, what you would see as a circular ring. But I can see that virtual reality is going to be quite a game changer again in ringing. The only problem is the market is very small. You're not going to have 100,000 people or 200,000 people across the world wanting to buy virtual reality headsets. The best virtual reality at the moment we have is Ding, which is giving you that sort of 3D look to the ringing circle. And I understand that has been used in basic terms with a VR headset. But I can see, give it another 5-10 years, I think there will be augmented reality ringing where you can have a number of you in the tower and actually fill in the other ringers and just place them where you want, and off you go. Someone shouts, "Go Bob Minor," and off you go. And I think that will be quite an interesting thing to watch. I just hope that people can get on board with the idea that simulators can help, certainly with training. They're not just there to learn methods, which sadly a lot of people think they are, all for silent ringing. So I would say go and if you haven't bought some simulator software, go and buy some and have a look at it. It's very incredibly cheap when you consider the amount of time that goes in. The most expensive simulator software is £40. So you can have all the Able, Virtual Belfry and Bell Tower. You can have all of those three products on your computer for under £100. And I think that's ridiculously good value. And the fact that you can use it at home, you don't have to use it with the simulator hardware. It gives so many options. And have a look at it. You never know. And it doesn't matter. You can build yourself a simulator. There is a Liverpool simulator project, which has done all the designs for building your own if you want to. As I say, I really don't mind how towers get simulators, but I do think that they should have one as a training and progression tool for their band. And if they don't, then maybe they're letting their band down from where they could be.
We haven't mentioned the price. How much do they cost?
Well, as far as Simbel is concerned, if somebody wanted a transmitter and receiver and they got power in the loft, it's under £150 to get a single transmitter and receiver. You obviously got to have a laptop, but most reasonable laptops from the last 5 years will do the job. And you can go right up to 8-bell installations, 10-bell installations, 12-bell installations. You just add transmitters as you go. Start with one receiver, one transmitter. Just use it, try it, play with it. And if you think a little bit out of the box of the way that you can train things, use some of the stuff that I've done, use some of the ideas that Art do, bring it into your training regime as a standard thing, and look at longer sessions for individuals is the other thing that I think is massively important. I have not a full learner, but somebody who was getting to the point of joined the band to ring rounds back last March, and I've done some bits and pieces with them over the last few weeks. And those sessions are all a couple of hours. So they are one-to-one, dumbbell, whatever it is. But feel free to just use and ask questions. There's some great Facebook groups for teachers. There is a really good one for simulators, users and suppliers, where you can fire questions in and you'll get answers from me and David and Tony and all the people who are building and producing simulators. And of course, then there is the ringing teachers forums as well. Put stuff in there. If you're looking at problems with installation or you want to talk about faculties, whether you need them, whether you don't, there's loads of information in the Bell Ringers Facebook group, in the Amateur Steeplekeepers Facebook group. There's lots of information everywhere. And email me. I don't mind. I'll give as much help as I can. I've become an enthusiast, so consequently can talk on the subject probably for hours, which is not what you want.
Well, it's an interesting subject, but I guess we should get to our final two questions. So apart from the towers that you regularly ring at, what's your favourite ring of bells and why?
Okay, I only started ringing in October 2016, so I haven't done much ringing around the place, but I have to say, if I said the prettiest ring, so the ring that's at the nicest location, a couple of years ago, I went to the Holy Trinity Church in Drumbo in Northern Ireland, just outside Belfast, with Don McLean, who you had on your podcast a few weeks ago. And I was over there working, and I got in touch with Don and said, I'm coming over. Is there any ringing? And Don said, well, you're not coming over on the right days, but if you're coming over, could you show us how to tie a bell and how to use a simulator? And I'll arrange for us to go. And we went to this lovely little village outside Belfast. It's literally, you know, 15 minutes away, but you'll think you're in the middle of Ireland somewhere, to this little stone church whose belfry, I have to say, is very impressive, beautifully kept. The ringing room was, it's all carpeted and it's all beautifully arranged. And it was just a lovely little place, really. So, yeah, if I had to choose any, it would be the Holy Trinity Church in Drumbo in Northern Ireland.
And what remarkable thing has happened to you that wouldn't have happened if you hadn't taken up bell ringing?
As I said, my background is electronics. So I started off working in a factory as an electronic engineer. I gave that up in about 1984 when I went out into field engineering. You didn't do any of the electronics anymore. It became board changing. And if there's one thing that I had to pick that happened to me, it would be the fact that it's taken me back to my roots. So I've gone back to electronics, which I almost certainly would not have done if I hadn't started bell ringing. So yeah, I would say getting back into electronics and bits and bytes and things like that.
Thanks to my guest Steve Farmer, who talked to us about Simbell, the wireless church bell simulator hardware. If you have enjoyed this episode, then please consider letting someone else know about it. This podcast was put together by a team. Special thanks go to Anne Tansley Thomas and John Gwynn, Leslie Belcher, and the Society of Cambridge Youths for the recording of their ringing.